Shalom Aleichem. My name is Rabbi Adam Dubin. This week, our learning is once again for the refuah of Zev Ben Leah. That's Dr. Zev Zelenko. We wish him a refuah as well as everyone else who needs it. Mr. Shem, we see the light at the end of the tunnel, so to speak, with regard to the virus that we are all still concerned about with varying degrees, but it does appear from the data that I am familiar with, and I'm certainly not a medical doctor, but that I have heard from multiple places that the light is, at the end of the tunnel, so to speak, is upon us, hopefully sooner rather than later, but we still must do everything that we need to in order to stay safe and healthy. But Eretz Hashem, by as we always say, that the best way to take care of yourself is by, in addition to the physical things to do, by more engrossing in learning Torah and in doing mitzvahs. So with that in mind, just to start out, as we know, this week, in addition to this being the Shabbos coming up, is Parshas Bamidbar, this first Parsha in Sefer Bamidbar, which also always precedes Shavuos, which of course is going to fall out this year on Sunday night, Monday and Tuesday. I've been debating a little bit if I should speak more about Shavuos or more about the Parsha, but we typically speak about the Parsha, so that's what we're going to do. But if I have a moment at the end, I might tie in something with Shavuos as well. This week, as we know, is the first Parsha in Parshas Bamidbar, which is concerned with the census that was taken. In fact, it says at the very beginning of the Parsha that Vayera Shem Moshe Bamidbar Sinai Ba'olo Mohed Be'echad L'Chodesh Sheini V'Shana Sheini Fotseisom Eretz Yisrael Leimor Zu'u Es Rosh Kol Adas B'nei Yisrael Nishbechotam Be'vet Avosam. It's Parashemos Kol Zachor Ligulosam. And it keeps going on, right? That Hashem said to Moshe that in the Midbar Sinai, by the Olamoid, on the first day of the second month, the second year, as they're coming out of Mitzrayim, to calculate the total number of the entire community, Kol Adas B'nei Yisrael, by their family groupings following their father's lineage, every male shall be counted by a head count according to the number of their names. Should be noted, of course, as we are familiar, that we do not typically count people. And that's what we're going to speak about really here. As you know, we can't really count people themselves. Therefore, if we want to know the number of people that are present, then we have to adopt a trick to make a census possible. And various tricks that I'm familiar with, you know, if you're counting based off of a pasuk of Hoshea and Samecha, you get to 10 words that in that pasuk, then you can end up, as you're looking at the people, then you know at least you have a minyan, 10 men, so you can daven. Other tricks as well, counting kippahs, counting chairs, counting hats. The trick that was, trick so to speak, that the census in our parsha was concerned about was the chatzi shekel that each that was used by each person, and again, this was didn't matter how wealthy a person was, if they were in our terms, if they were billionaires or if they were paupers, that they still each one contributed a chatzi shekel, a half shekel, and only a chatzi shekel, not any more. And not any less. They gave the coins. The coins themselves were counted as opposed to the people being counted. Later on, in the time of Shaul HaMelech, when the census was conducted, that was with the aid of pottery shards. Shaul conducted a second census that was with sheep. Each person took a sheep from the royal flock and they counted the sheep. In the times of the Beit HaMikdash, when they had to count the Kohanim, in order to conduct a series of lotteries, determine who was merit to perform different aspects of the Avodah, fingers were counted instead of people to avoid the prohibition. This you see in the Gemara Maseches Yuma, Daf Chaf Beis Amid Beis, which discusses these different cases. And if you're learning Daf Yomi, would have just come through recently. So, of course, a series of questions arises, or a question rather arises. So surely the counting of fingers, sheep, or shekels instead of a person is simply a legalistic loophole. Again, it's also to count Jewish people. So how could it be permissible to count the coins or the sheep or fingers instead? And the answer, I'd like to suggest, can be explained by Derech Mashal in a story. After various wars, there's often the problem of undetonated landmines. Imagine a large field that's filled with landmines, and then no one knows where they're located. Large fences and signs are put up to warn people of the danger. And it's forbidden to go in the field. It's dangerous. And also, we want to make sure, again, that we avoid danger. So the point's up for our benefit. But if someone had a map of precisely where the landmines are located, then if they're very careful, then they could cross the field safely. Would that be cheating the system? Of course not. There's no problem with getting to the other side of the field. The only problem is stepping on the landmine. People are allowed to cross as long as they don't step on the mines along the way. So too, we are entitled to know how many people there are at any given time. We simply are not permitted to assign a number to a person. If we can calculate the number of people without counting them, then this would be permissible. Of course, it's even calculating the number of people in a permissible way should be limited to when it's necessary. Such again, example I gave of making sure there's a minion for tefillahs, but there could be other times as well. Only Hashem knows the true reason why he prohibited us to assign the number to a person. However, one reason that I've heard suggested is that treating someone as a number is dehumanizing. Each number assigned to an individual person is arbitrary. We could just as easily assign the number 1 to somebody as we could the number 10 or 100, and so too with other people. And it wouldn't affect the overall count. By referring to a person in this arbitrary way, we are negating the fact that each person has their neshama, which is unique, and they are a unique world unto themselves. And we don't have to look very far back in our history to see the devastating effect of people being called by a number. I heard a story recently. There's a rabbi named Rabbi Leder. Anyway, he heard the story from him that he was once on a stopover from in Greece, and during a flight that he was going to Eretz Yisrael from Australia, or between Eretz Yisrael and Australia. And while he's waiting for the flight, he found himself sitting at a table, and there was an elderly Jewish woman and a young German backpacker. And this German innocently inquired about the numbers that were tattooed on this old lady's arm. The lady calmly replied that it was a memento from the war. And she went over to the rabbi and said to her in a shock, that even a question, specifically given the nationality of the person who asked the question. Rabbi Leder said that he was amazed by this lady's even-temperedness, and suggested that if he was in her position, he would have perhaps responded sarcastically to go ask the grandfather. He might have been the one who gave it. Anyway, the Gemara in Maseches Yuma Daf Yud Dalet Amid Beis compares and contrasts the reigns of Shaul HaMelech and David HaMelech. As we said earlier, Shaul HaMelech counted his army in the correct way, again using a pottery as opposed to counting people, and for the correct purpose, because he needed to plan for a war. David HaMelech, on the other hand, counted the Bnei Yisrael in an improper fashion, and he was punished for that. Apparently, David HaMelech ordered that the people should be counted directly, without the use of a coin or some other item. How could it be that David HaMelech ordered that the people be counted in this way? How could it be such a simple in halacha? And some mafarshim have suggested that for this reason, some reason David HaMelech understood the prohibition of counting the Yisrael was only applied to Moshe Rabbeinu, but it's again only some mafarshim. It's not the classical understanding. The Tanakh, in Divrei Hayamim, and also see the commentary of the Radak. This is in Perek Chaf Aleph Amud Perek Aleph. Sorry, Chaf Aleph Pasuk Aleph. So he's thinking in Gemara. Speaking Gemara, I don't always remember when I'm on a roll. Anyway, so they said that. So anyway, it says in Divrei Hayamim that there's more going on under the surface. David HaMelech was actually incited by the Satan to commit this avera. And the Midrash suggests that Hashem was angry that the Bnei Yisrael were not sufficiently troubled by the fact that Beis Hamikdash was not yet rebuilt, called the Chomer to us. However, in discussing this event, the Ramban, that's Nachmanides, on our parsha, cannot accept that David HaMelech made a fundamental error by counting the Bnei Yisrael directly. He suggests instead that David HaMelech did use coins when conducting his census, but that he had Nevera in a different area. The Ramban brings a few different explanations, one of which is the suggestion that David HaMelech's Nevera by counting Bnei Yisrael was unnecessary, and that's the reason why it was a problem. He wasn't going out to a war, but only sought to gladden his heart so he should know how many people were in the nation. We can learn from here that a census should only be done for proper purposes. We should put our emunah in the Kodesh Baruch Hu and not in numbers. Some people believe that counting can generate the ayin hara, the evil eye. There are a number of different explanations for this concept, ranging from the mystical, that's an example, if someone receives an ayin hara, it can cause them to suffer, or the more rationalistic, it's not nice to show off and cause others to feel jealous. If we flaunt our wealth or our strength or our numbers, we can cause other people to feel pain. As well as showing a lack of sensitivity to those who may have less, it could also be placing a stumbling block in front of others and cause them to commit nevira of their being jealous. Some people are so careful of this concept that they will not even mention the number of children that they have. There's actually a halachic source for this idea. Shulchan Aruch rules that we can only daven for material brachas before we count our stock, because the bracha can only rest on that that's hidden from the eye. This you see the Shulchan Aruch or Chaim. All this talk of Ayin Hara reminds me of a joke. During the trial in court, in a non-Jewish judge asked an elderly witness, "Mr. Levy, how old are you?" Mr. Levy replied, "Ayin Hara, I'm 83. Now, of course, it should really be pronounced not Kanayin Hara, but Kain Ayin Hara, which is a Yiddish for there should be no evil eye, or as it says in Hebrew, Bli Ayin Hara. But again, say Kanayin Hara, I'm 83. All right, Kanayin Hara, 83. Mr. Levy, please just answer the question directly. How old are you? Kanayin Hara, 83. And after this continued for a few times, the judge became exasperated. One of the Jewish lawyers offered to help. He said, "Mr. Levy, how old are you, Kanayin Hara?" Mr. Levy answered, 83. So we should remember that one of the reasons suggested for prohibition of counting people is to avoid becoming overly proud or boastful for the number of people in our lives, and we should put our faith, emuna, in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and not in numbers. One of the other explanations for the Ayin Hara works is that we shouldn't show off our possessions and make people feel pain. And Hashem wants us to be sensitive to other people's feelings. And if not, we may arouse a divine judgment. If that is how we act with our possessions, then perhaps we don't really deserve to have all of them. Now, just briefly, if you'll bear with me a moment, again, it is Shavuos coming up, but to mention, I came across something, a fascinating article, if you will, discussing the halachic challenges of cheesecake. For some reason, that there's a lot of discussion about amongst certain poskim about there's a minhag, widely accepted minhag, especially among the Ashkenazi Jewry, to have dairy products on dairy suda, not just dairy products, but dairy suda on Shavuos. Certainly, this is not universally accepted. In fact, there is, of course, a pasuk in Simcha al Basar v'Yayin that you can't have simcha except when you have meat and wine, and you can't have meat and wine, or you can't have the meat, rather, if you're having dairy. But there's ways around it. So just fascinating. I thought it was a joke when I read the article, but I just felt I had to share the basic idea that there's a whole question about cheesecake and Shavuos specifically. In fact, someone even called it a Corbin cheesecake, because since there's this minhag to have dairy products on Shavuos because of a nes that involved because the fact that when the Bnei Yisrael in the Midbar received the Torah from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they did not have enough time to kasher their kelim, so they could end up to shech kosher meat. Now, of course, as someone who's worked in Hashgacha before, I can tell you it's not so simple to have kosher dairy either. But again, that's the way that the minhag developed. At any rate, the basic idea is that there's an isser of having dairy bread. This isser extends the zman hazeh. You can't have any dairy bread. There's a discussion years ago, there's a brand of English muffins called Thomas's that at least one point in time or another was dairy. They put milk in it. And so how can it be that it had hashgacha on it? And the answer was given at the time, it's a unique shape. So it's more like a pastry than it is a bread. But again, it's an isser. It's an actual isser to have dairy bread. Pizza, by the way, doesn't count as dairy bread, even if you make a mozi on it, because you see specifically the cheese and the dough, they're not combined together. The issue is when you don't know that there's dairy in it, and you might come to have the dairy bread with a meat meal. At any rate, because of the minhag of having dairy on Shavuos, the concept you should have comes perhaps from the shtei lechem, the two loaves that are customary to eat. So Chazal, they were concerned, and so said there's an issue to having dairy bread because you know you're going to have a meat meal at least one time, and so you want to have the dairy as well. You have to wait a certain number of hours between meat and dairy. Again, different customs how long that is, but certainly you cannot have them together. Lots of discernment involved. And some of the halakhic authorities include an issur of having dairy baked goods at all, including cookies and berakas, which, if they are dairy, might mistakenly be eaten with meat. And so, therefore, they would fall under the prohibition of having dairy bread. Most people do not hold by that specific issur. In fact, you can see very often you have dairy cookies and cakes and things of that nature. In fact, I know in Eretz Yisrael, the dairy berakas are in a different shape. Are usually triangular as opposed to other berakas that that are more rectangular in shape, as an extra safeguard against this mix-up. Although I've seen in the United States that this does not hold true. I've seen parv berakas that are actually triangular shape as well. At any rate, there's specifically about the cheesecake, because it's not bread, it's not even a pastry. Everyone knows that it is cheesecake. Yes, there can be part of cheesecake, But everyone knows that, that a cheesecake looks like a cheesecake. At least most cheesecakes look like cheesecake. And so as a result, people will end up to be more, to say, well, if I have to fulfill the minhag, and it's only a minhag, not a halakha, if I have to fulfill the minhag of having some dairy product on Shavuos, it might as well be cheesecake, because then I know that I'm not going to have it with my fleishik tzuva, and no one's going to think that it's parv. Everyone's going to know that it is what it is. The shaila is like a bracha to make on cheesecake. It's much beyond the scope of what we're speaking about this evening, as well as the fact that we're over time. But if you are going to have a dairy product, there are different minhagim about how to do this. I would recommend consulting your local Orthodox rabbi. Typically speaking, the minhag I'm familiar with involves most prevalent, I should say. There's many minhagim, but most that I'm familiar with is that your kiddush, and say if you're able to go to shul, the kiddush in shul, or the kiddush you might make at home. If you're not able to go to shul, that you can have has a dairy kiddush. Then, of course, you would end up to wash separately, you know, end your kiddush, make your bracha achrona, your after bracha, wash and make a hamotzi, and make sure you have something to drink as well. Hard liquor is often recommended because it will has a destructive flavoring to the palate that is not involved with other types of beverages. Anyway, so that is one minhag. There, of course, are others, but that way, if you especially if you wash at the kiddush that you're having the cheesecake in, then you bench afterwards, and then you end up to have your real seuda, then you are fulfilling the idea of having shtei alechem, the two loaves, as well as the minhag of having cheese, the dairy, and of course having a real seuda that fulfills the mitzvah of simchas yontif. Anyway, I wish everyone a good Shabbos and a good yontif. Thank you, Benjamin.